Welcome to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by Verizon.
Welcome, everyone. I'm John Thomas Flynn with Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. My guest in studio today is Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. And our topic today is 5G, the next generation of mobile networks. Welcome, Mitsuko. A friend from the Public Policy Institute, Alan Shark, has told me about Montgomery County, Maryland's extensive plans and activities involving 5G, the next generation of mobile networks beyond the current 4G LTE mobility network environment. Tell me how Montgomery County got started in this in your particular role. And maybe first of all, tell us about 5G and just what it is.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me today. I think the important thing to look at 5G is that overall, it's really a catch-all marketing term. If you think of 3G as what connected computers to the internet, and 4G is what connected our smartphones to the internet, 5G is really about the internet of everything. All of our devices have little sensors and little connectivity that give back and forth data, and we leverage it. So 5G really is intended to be the internet of everything.
And as I know, 5G could provide broadband speeds up to 10, even 20 gigabits per second, 1,000 times faster than 4G, 1,000 times. Imagine smartphones downloading high-definition movies in a second. Well, again, tell us about Montgomery County and your role in this.
So I handle the Ultra Montgomery Program, which is a broadband economic development program that the county has in place to ensure that our businesses and our residents have access to ultra-high-speed broadband as much as they need to get the job done, robust, reliable, and secure. And as well, to also ensure that everyone can participate in the digital economy. And we want to be at the cutting edge of new innovation, new technologies, new device companies that are going to leverage that broadband capacity.
You know, honestly, I don't think I'd ever use it for downloading a movie in a second, but I'm sure my kids will. But seriously, I've learned there are critical functions where 5G will have a tremendous applicability, and not just for streaming videos. Tell us about the applications Montgomery County is excited about, at least initially.
Well, I think we have to kind of step back and understand that 5G is at the nascent stage. So you really have a chicken and egg issue in that there are a lot of device manufacturers that are waiting for new spectrum to be deployed. There are a lot of carriers who are waiting for new equipment to be developed. So to some extent, we have some ideas. And right now, what they really exist are the next iteration of what we already know and what we're at the cutting edge of things that we haven't thought of before. So the first uses that you're going to see of 5G, 5G is both a technology as well as new spectrum. It is primarily as a technology designed to put antennas closer to devices so that it's just if you think of if I run from point A to point B, if I shorten that distance, I can make more trips. So if I'm carrying capacity, I can go faster and faster and I can deliver more things. It also 5G, particularly for new spectrum, it functions at higher frequencies and the distance that it travels is shorter. So just to visualize it, if you think of a 100-foot tower and it has a mile radius that it covers, inside of that circle, you could put 57 small cells. And each of those small cells would have as much capacity as that taller one. And those small cells would only be at about 25 to 35 feet tall, and they'd only cover about a 300-foot radius. So the idea is, particularly if you have concentrated urban areas or roadways, is that I can move traffic, particularly from any kind of smartphone type of device, and I can move it from a higher elevation, and then I can what they'll call densification, and I'll switch that traffic onto a shorter antenna. And so then what I'm able to do is I can use some of the same frequency more efficiently to deliver those services. What that has implications for is the primary thing I think that what you'll start to see it is in the home right now, in Montgomery County, we have 3 wireline broadband providers for residential, and we have about 10 to 15 for commercial. In the residential areas where a lot of people are familiar with Comcast or Verizon, what you'll have is you'll have other companies come in, and they'll want to either offer fixed wireless, where you're looking at T-Mobile and Sprint merging, and T-Mobile has acquired a video stream provider. So they may want to come in and say, I'm going to offer you a streaming video product that competes with cable so that you have another mode. Alternatively, you could look at somebody like AT&T, which has bought DirecTV. So they've got a wireless telephone for you. They've got a video product. And now what they're going to say is, I'm going to use a form of wireless and I'm going to deliver you broadband speeds that compete with the cable modem service that you've been getting. So the first thing that you'll likely see is that more of that happening in a competitive environment. The second thing you're going to see is just mobile carriers, the AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, wireless. They're going to be able to offer to consumers who are downloading more and more things on their phones, faster speeds, richer graphics, where you have people who are doing video gaming and some of those things. So those are sort of more of the sort of initial consumer things that you will begin to see. In addition to that, what you'll see from a local government perspective is most likely what you're going to see is a lot of things that are leveraging sensors and data. And I think that local governments and folks who work in that area need to really be circumspect about it. You can measure a lot of things, but that doesn't mean that we suddenly got enough money to fix all the lead in Flint, or that we know that air pollution is an issue and now we suddenly had a way to get all the cars off the road. So there's a limit to just what sensors can do. A lot of what that can be focused on is management of what you're doing now. So some of that can be more efficient street lighting, predictive lighting. So I know in areas in which the lights can dim, but as people start to walk, they go up. You can have things where you're looking at traffic sensors. So I want to actually measure the usage of my road, not just in how many cars are on it, but also how many bicyclists, how many people are getting on buses, how many pedestrians are in that area. You can use it in other ways to measure not just when people onboard the bus, but how long do they travel? Which routes do they go on more? And then you can start to leverage it. There's certain things that people look at, smart trash cans that tells you when it's full. And you just have to kind of balance that out between, well, you know, if I have a big festival, I probably know it's full. So you can kind of balance it out. Some of other things that you can be doing are route optimization. So that are you managing your trash routes and your trash pickups, because maybe I'm actually telling like where the busiest spots are. Is there a move that potentially some places I don't pick up every week? But you have to balance that with not everybody's going to like that you didn't come by and get the trash that week.
We'll take a short break now. My guest today is Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland. You're listening to Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm John Thomas Flynn.
Critical missions require a reliable and secure wireless network. Verizon partners with federal agencies to enable missions now with 4G and IoT, and in the future with 5G mobility solutions. Federal agencies choose the wireless network RootMetrics ranks number one overall network performance for the 11th consecutive time. Get connected and stay connected with Verizon for all your mission needs. VerizonEnterprise.com/federalmobility.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm John Thomas Flynn, and my in-studio guest today is Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland. Our topic today is 5G, the next generation of mobile networks. Let's take another look. It's kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room to me, and that's the base stations or nodes, and talking about the towers that need to be replaced. Los Angeles, for example, estimates that there are 30,000 to 50,000 base stations will be needed. And I'm sure that Metropolitan D.C., including Montgomery County, would need that and more. And there's a bloody fight with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, particularly the chairman, Ajit Pai, seems determined to block out exclusive local jurisdiction on placement and perhaps more importantly, on fees to the big carriers for using the light pole space. Mitsuko, tell us about that whole issue.
So I think it's unfortunate that the FCC has really set this up as an adversarial issue, because really, if you look at a lot of the 5G application, the big customers are going to be local governments. So it's unfortunate that that's how they've chosen to pursue it. I think what's important to think about, and you mentioned some of these urban areas, that's where 5G is coming. You look at, and Commissioner Rosenworcel, she mentioned it in the congressional hearing, that all the spectrum that the FCC has made available, it only travels short distances. So it's only going to go to urban areas. So this idea that somehow if I give the largest companies more money by artificially subsidizing them, that that money will naturally flow into the areas that have the worst return on investment that the market already left behind, there's no evidence to support that. The issue with it is that every one of these small cell antennas, it's got to be 25 to 35 feet. It only travels a max of 300 feet. So you've got to put them further and further deeper into neighborhoods.
And we should point out the high frequency route that the U.S. is taking actually will require these to have point-to-point or site-to-site. And that's why so many are required, because they can't see through the buildings like the old communication technology, mobility technology could.
It's, you know, it was interesting. We hosted a commercial building convention, and there was a guy on the stage, and he talked about that when you look at this building, there's a lot of design work that went into the plumbing, into the sewer. But the amount of design work that actually goes into standards to ensure that devices work in the building is pretty skimpy. But if you think about it, more people use their cell phones than use the lavatory during the 2 hours. So there is a big question, particularly with LEED certified buildings. A lot of the coating that they're putting on buildings doesn't make it work. There are ways to get around it, and it's essentially the same way that you use Wi-Fi in your house. You can use distributed antenna systems, and it's a way of essentially bringing the signal into the building. But the issue is, in most of these places, local governments have invested in areas that create urban and suburban areas where a lot of people want to live close together, because you put in good road networks and transit and libraries and good schools, and those things all cost money. So now what you want is to come and say that I want to be able to give wireless carriers the ability to go to the front of the line, they get reduced costs to use the property, and that they should get subsidized permit rates to be able to use those areas, but they shouldn't have any obligations to build out underserved areas, have programs that give job training skills, and these are good jobs to people that have not been brought along in the economy. And you're not even ensuring that what you're doing is spreading it out so that you're expanding capacity, because everybody can be going after the same segment of the market. So that's why local governments feel like we should be partners. The other piece of it is that design should be beautiful. You should not be able to come in and I got to put in just the cheapest thing that I happen to have lying around or that worked in any other place. And the biggest challenge that you've really got is in a lot of places where since the 50s, people have been having utilities be undergrounded. So now you want to come into an area. If you have a telephone pole and you're adding an antenna, that's one thing. But where you have, I've got a 14-foot pole, there's no overhead wires. And now I want to come in, and you've seen bills that have proposed that you could put in something that's 50 feet tall, that you could add 20 feet to something, that you can have 6 or 28 cubic feet of equipment. For a lot of people, their home represents the largest asset that they own, and they made an investment, and it makes a big difference to them. If I came into this neighborhood, I bought, everything was underground. So how is it now that something's just going to pop up? So it's finding a balance, because at the same time, people want those services, and we want to ensure that people have access to the services. But what people are not convinced on right now is that particularly all of the things, the smart refrigerators and things in your house, they don't use very much capacity. So it's this kind of idea of, well, we have to have it, we have to do all these things. And yet really what you're offering me is you just want to sell me the same thing that I'm already buying in a different format. And oh, by the way, the phone that you want to sell it to me on is going to be priced at $3,000.
Yes, that is a little bit of a sticker shock. Let's kind of look forward now and look at the applicabilities for 5G, and particularly in government. We talk about, you know, the smart cars being able to communicate in virtually no latency at all. And we're also talking about what impact that would have not only on traffic lights, but there, and you've already talked about the Internet of Things, so to speak. Tell us some other areas where this could really make a difference in government.
Well, I think one of the things that we're already pioneering and some other folks are doing, when you look at transit, is moving potentially from in suburban areas from bus routes that may be demand-based. So they look sort of more like a Lyft or an Uber than they do as a bus that's sort of coming. And the idea is that in some of those places, if I could get you from your home to another light rail or metro type of situation, then I might have a shot of actually persuading you to leave the car at home and use more energy efficient, fuel efficient types of transit. The other piece of this to be thinking about is that on some of these applications, the vehicles themselves, when we talk about 5G, we are not just talking about the wireless carriers. A lot of the new smart cars that we're looking at would be, they use LiDAR, which is a form of radar, but it's using light. And what it can be doing is it's sensing sort of how close am I to the car. Some people have this already in their car where they have a cruise control, but you can set it so it knows to stay two or three car lengths back from the car in there. A lot of the potential improvements can be pedestrian safety. Because if your car can automatically sense that a pedestrian has walked into the road or you're making a right turn and you didn't notice a pedestrian has come there, those can be some of probably the first ones. There are a lot of things to be happening in the medical device space. And
we'll take another short break now. My guest today is Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland. You're listening to Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm John Thomas Flynn.
Critical missions require a reliable and secure wireless network. Verizon partners with federal agencies to enable missions now with 4G and IoT, and in the future with 5G mobility solutions. Federal agencies choose the wireless network RootMetrics ranks number one overall network performance for the 11th consecutive time. Get connected and stay connected with Verizon for all your mission needs. VerizonEnterprise.com/federal mobility.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm John Thomas Flynn, and my in-studio guest today is Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland. We're discussing 5G, the next generation of mobile networks. Mitsuko, you were just talking about perhaps the medical area, telemedicine, things like that. Please continue.
So the biggest thing that really people are focusing on, it used to be that they were looking for different apps to create. And what they're really looking now is, how can I leverage what you're already using and add some things to it? So there's a lot of things that can be happening in the home. They can be as simple as, I can sense that you went to sleep, so I turn the TV off. Other things can be that when you walk down the hall to the bathroom, that there's some floor lighting that occurs. That can be important for preventing falls, which is the biggest thing that most people working in the aging space as a health concern is not falling, not breaking a bone late in life. There are other things that you can be doing that are using various medical devices to sense your overall health, doing some diagnostic. I work in a space in which when we have a lot of folks who are low income, it typically means they don't have transportation. So if you can use a nursing student and a camera to determine, do you really need to come in to see me, or your look's pretty good, that can be a new thing. There are other things in which you're leveraging just general big data to try to determine where you can be making improvements. So I think there's also a lot in our public parks and recreation spaces. There's a lot of different sensors that can help you understand of how well are things utilized? Where are people's tastes? Where are they changing? How are people congregating? And so you can design your programs that better meet your audience.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things with the whole storage thing going away and broadband being not an issue anymore, this really changed for things like citizen engagement with government. You know, we talked about potholes where people could take a picture of them and send it in. But this goes far beyond that with 5G, doesn't it?
I think it does, but we're still not quite there. We still struggle with ways to manage input. We still struggle with, in a lot of cases, the same 20 people will show up to every meeting, but the other 200,000 people are at home. So finding ways that people can meaningfully communicate, and also finding ways that you can, basically, people have got busy lives and many things going on. So how can I present information to you and give you choices, complex situations, but narrowing them down? I think that it does, though, we are on the cutting edge. It will provide a lot of things. But the way for us to move forward is not just to simply roll into a neighborhood and say, I'm going to eliminate your zoning. I get to put up what I want. I don't have to pay for it, and you're going to like it.
Okay. We've also read that perhaps it's in the public safety area that might have the greatest application for IG. Can you address that?
So in the public safety area, one of the things that people have been really been talking about is, can I send a firefighter out to a building and I will be able to access a database that tells me instantly, are there hazardous material? It gives me a floor plan. It tells me certain features of that. My communications work well within the building, in the basement area, through concrete walls. And that's really sort of the goal that we're trying to get to, as well as areas in which you want to have shorter response times to get emergency vehicles there. So a lot of those things, the technology, the 5G is an enabler, but ultimately you have to have filed the plans. You have to have kept those plans up to date. So it's really kind of taking what we're already doing and finding a faster means to distribute the information, but it doesn't change the underlying issue that you've got to have good information in the first place in order to make it more accessible.
You know, one of the things that I read about, because of the new wave of 5G-based apps that will likely transform the way government field workers get their job done, I would think that would be a big plus to be able to have that kind of instantaneous communications that 5G will bring in things like human services areas and others.
There are, and in that sense, what you really want to think about is it's the elimination of the paper form and the database entry. So if I'm out in the field, we've already started to do it in some places where if somebody sends an email in rather than somebody reading it to you over the phone, it comes up on your device. But can I take the form, my inspection things, I'm out in the field and I'm taking it on a tablet and I'm putting those things in. And while there's a call taker on a 311 system, that information is instantaneously coming up. It's updating a certain database. If I'm doing inspections, that information is going in there. If I need to pay my fees and there's something else that needed to be done, I don't have to wait for the person to drive back into the office and get those things. So it does have a lot. The other thing I would mention on the public safety radio is the big change is moving to an IP, Internet Protocol-based radio, away from the analog, and that will enable a lot more layered and nuanced information to be available out in the field.
With that, we'll have to conclude our program today. I want to thank our guest, Mitsuko Herrera, Ultra Montgomery Program Director for Planning, Policy, and Special Projects, Office of Broadband Programs, Department of Technology Services for Montgomery County, Maryland. And thank you for listening. For more on this discussion, visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search for Federal Insights. Until then, bye for now. I'm John Thomas Flynn.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.